So, welcome everybody. Thank you very much, Dr. Krebs. I was somewhat joking your timeliness, but also for your willingness. It's exciting, I think, certainly for us and for the staff and the consultants to actually get this process going. We've been talking about it. We've been talking about it as a board for some time, and then getting through town meeting and getting through the preparation and getting all of you signed on, and here we are, which is great. We have a busy first meeting, which is not purely going to be administrative and logistics. We need to dive right into some of the most important stuff and get your feedback. I think what I would like to do, though, most everybody knows everybody, but just in case, I do want to very, very quickly, if it's all right, do a brief round of introductions, both for us and for the consultant team, so that we can do that one time, if everybody knows who we are. I will do a little bit of stage setting, and then I'm going to turn it over to the team to lead us from there. My hope is that we will go until about 9 o'clock for this meeting, and that's what I hope for most of our monthly meetings, that it's a lot to get done in, you know, a relative short period of time. It's the spring, so we'll see. But that's my goal, just for folks' timing. Great. Don, do you mind leading off? And we'll just go around this way, just a brief introduction. Your name tag tells you that you're a town moderator appointee, but...
I'm Donna Smallwood. I'm a town moderator appointee. My most recent town service was on as chair of the town's advisory committee.
I'm Liz Klein. I don't have a name tag, but I was a Board of Selectmen appointee. I've been involved in various organizations across town, including executive director of the Hingham Downtown Association.
I'm Liza O'Reilly. I'm school committee representative. I'm in my third term in the school committee. I've lived in Hingham for 27 years. I still have kids in the schools, and some have graduated.
Nancy Kerber. I'm here from the Affordable Housing Trust. I've sat on that board for about 7 years. And the project we're working on the trust that will tie in, I think, to what we're doing here is working on a housing plan, which hopefully has collected some information that we can be using as part of this discussion, for sure.
I'm Deirdre Anderson. I'm an appointee on behalf of the Harbor Development Committee. I also serve on the town 3A task force regarding the Route 3A Summer Street corridor alongside Hingham Harbor.
Gordon Carman with the Planning Board and Chair of the Master Plan Committee.
Paul Healy, 38 years of service.
I said briefly, so we can't.
Presently, I'm with the ZBA, and I was on the 2000 Master Plan.
And a little bit in between those.
I'm Bob Heidel. Lived in Hingham for now 45 years, which surprises me. I am here as a sacrificial participant from the Conservation Commission. I'm a hydrogeologist, geologist, economist, and trained as a lawyer, but didn't have the patience to practice.
Jerry Seelan, lived here for, I think, 35 years. Been on a number of town committees. Most recently, and it was a few years ago, I was on the advisory committee, ended that as chair. I think I'm also on the town hall study committee right now, and I am a moderator appointee.
Mike Cransley, I'm the HGIC appointee, and I also chair that committee.
I'm Susan Sarney, I'm the executive health officer.
Hans Vanderleft, I am with the Historic Districts Commission, three terms now, and I've lived in Hingham for a little over 20 years. Time flies.
Mary Savage Dunham, planner.
Should we wait for the...
Do you want me to go first, or we could just keep them?
Or is it whatever?
If we're going to...
We have that point in the presentation.
We do have it in the presentation, so if you wait a second, you'll see pictures
fair
of
enough.
All of us.
Fair enough.
Well, go ahead and do this. You want me to go ahead and jump in, or did you have...
No, I'm gonna, if it's okay, I just need a couple of minutes, just do a little bit of stage setting, I
That's
think.
Fine.
For some folks, and to go over some sort of ground rules about... we're all going to work on this. In your packets, there's actually the statute, the language that dictates what a master plan is, right? So what we're working on is building a master plan, a draft master plan that will be submitted to the planning board. It's a requirement of planning boards to do these. As Paul said, one was done in 2001. The one prior to that, I think, was done before I walked. So we're sort of due, right? There was an effort to update the goals between kind of 2015 and 2017 of that 2000 plan. And so that's why we're all here. I'm not going to go through the whole statute, but it is important, I think, for you folks to understand why it is we're doing this. It's advisory to the planning board. There is a mechanical element to it. There are requirements in a master plan, which Judy and her team will go through shortly. But if you look at the agenda, and then as you hear the discussion in this evening's meeting, as I've been saying to folks, for us, I think this year, while the draft plan for the board is a product, the process is a product, I think, for all of us. If we do this right and we're able to have a really robust community engagement program, which you're going to hear more about shortly, we are all aware that there are an awful lot of talented, engaged people in town. We want to hear from them, but then there's that next ring of folks that we also want to try to reach. And I'm not going to steal their thunder. I'll let Judy and Daphne go through the details. But it's going to be multi-layers. It's going to be large meetings that we're going to invite folks for. There's certainly online submittals. And then, I guess I will steal your thunder a tiny bit, the idea of going where the people are rather than having them come to us, I think, is kind of a key element. And that's going to be all of our jobs, right? You all have networks, you have contacts, you have groups that you're part of, whether they're book clubs or town committees or what have you. And we're going to hopefully solicit you to help us with that outreach. Whether you're leaning at a table at farmer's market, whatever, you know, to try to gather as much information as we can. As Nancy said, the housing plan is underway. There's an awful lot of fresh information that we're going to be building on. We're not starting from scratch because the town's busy. The Southern Study Group, we have two members of that study group on here, the housing plan, the demographics information that Liza provided at the school committee. So there's an awful lot of us information for us to start with, which is, I think, to our advantage. And with all those folks that I mentioned and everybody else, there's primary knowledge, there's primary experience on the committee. People that were actually in those conversations that developed those plans, as opposed to just reading the static plans themselves, which I think is very helpful. We're going to be, just as far as ground rules for meetings, and then I'm going to stop, and hopefully this will be the most you hear from me at any of these meetings. We meet monthly. As I said, we'll try to keep them to 2 hours. Those might flex depending on the content and the information that we need to tackle. These meetings are public, open to the public, but they're not public meetings in the sense that we're going to be taking a lot of incoming comment. There will be, as I just said, and you'll hear more, lots of opportunities, hopefully exhaustive opportunities for folks to provide comment. These meetings are going to be working sessions for all of us. There's going to be a lot to get through. There's a lot to digest. There's a lot of feedback to be provided. So we will welcome folks to come and hear what we're talking about and provide feedback after the fact, either online or elsewhere. But these 2 hours each month are sort of ours, and then you'll hear the number of opportunities, hopefully, we have from an outreach perspective. I think with that, I will stop. If there are any questions for the chair at this point, we can take those. Otherwise, I think I'll turn it over to Judy. She can start the process and run through her presentation.
Okay, super. Thank you. So you will be introduced to the team in one slide. But I'm Judy Barrett, and I'm the owner of Barrett Planning Group, and we're really delighted to be here. We've all worked together, and I think we're going to have a good time with you and really enjoy this community. So those various logos up there kind of represent the whole team. Please, I hope this is going to work. Voila. So I'll just introduce, and then we'll let other folks on the team kind of hear their voice in addition to mine. I've been in the planning field for about 34 years. I've worked in state and local government. I've been most of my career as a consultant. I actually did a little work here many years ago on early years of the Housing Trust. I did a training here for the Citizen Planner Training Collaborative a couple of years ago on special permits and variances, as I recall. I don't remember if you were in the room, but you probably would have taught that class. We have an office in Plymouth. We are a firm of three, about to be three and a half. And we do mostly master plans like this. I do a fair amount of work in affordable housing as well. It's probably the thing I'm the most known for outside of this line of work. We do a lot of work also in zoning recodifications and zoning bylaw revisions. So land use is kind of an element of the plan that we tend to be very involved with. I also do a lot of work in economic development. So that's our firm. I'll turn to you and then we'll go this way.
Okay. My name is Alexis Landelada, and I am also part of their planning group. I spent the first decade of my career actually in education as a teacher, and the last year or so I've been working with Judy at Barrett Planning Group. So I'm a project analyst and also the team liaison.
Yes, the taskmaster for all of the group. So we'll go down to the end, Martha.
Oh, sure. I'm Martha Lyon. I am a landscape architect, not a planner, although I do a lot of planning work.
Yes,
you do. I have a practice that's based in Northampton, Massachusetts, in the western part of the state. Not by the Pacific Ocean, but in the western part of the state. And my practice focuses on planning and design work for historic landscapes of all different types. And I have done a lot of work both as a landscape architect practitioner, but also in team with this constellation of planners and others. Most of my work on this project will focus on working with you on your historic and cultural resources, which I know are of great concern. I'll also be focusing on the natural resources, open space, and recreation as well.
I'm Daphne Politis. I'm a planner. I also have a degree in research and architecture. I've worked in over 30 municipalities on their master plans in a variety of roles, sometimes leading it, always involved in creating the community engagement. And I'm also a trained mediator and facilitator. Certified as a mediator, and so I believe very, very much in that process. I think that it's a critical part of a democracy, and it's a critical part of citizenship to be a part of making decisions about the future of a place. So I will also be in this particular project and in many others be working on the public facilities and services component. And that's some of what a lot of people see as that's where they mostly participate in thinking about where the budget goes in terms of facilities. But really, it's about designing a future, and it's about every aspect of the town. So,
my name is Jeff Davis, and I'm a planner with the Horsley Witten Group. We are based in Cape Cod, although I work out of our Providence office. While I'm a planner, and our planning team is based in Providence, our firm is largely known as an environmental engineering firm. We do a lot of work with water and water quality in coastal communities, which obviously is going to be very important in a community like Hingham. Our role is largely to work on the sections regarding sustainability, water, and energy. Also be doing a lot of work with Daphne on community engagement and with Judy on land use.
And the missing person this evening is Jeff McStudis from Beta Group, who was here this afternoon for the tour but went home not feeling well. And we were actually glad that he made it this afternoon to be on the tour because he always asks great questions. But Jeff is a transportation planner, and you will see him around, and he'll be working mainly on that element of the plan. Jeff and my firm, and probably Horsley Witten as well, will also be doing a lot of the mapping work. We'll probably share that responsibility. We each have GIS capability. So, That's, so that's who we are. So I wanted to just get everybody kind of into a framework of thinking about what this document is, this process is that we're going to be working on with you over the next several months. You do have a copy of the statute, and I'll tell you that is kind of dry reading. But it does lay out kind of what the required content is of a plan in Massachusetts, and we have divided that up on our team according to, you know, our relative expertise. But I think it's kind of helpful to think about what this really is that we're producing as we work on these individual elements of the plan. It's a way to think about what you want for your future and how you get there. So it typically consists of a vision, of sort of a vision statement about the future. That's a very important part of the master plan and is a really a focus of the early work that we'll be doing with you. Understanding kind of the shared principles that guide the way a community thinks about its future, how it regulates, how it sets policy. Understanding who is in your community today and how has that changed and who's likely to be here in the future. So that as you're making planning decisions, you're not just thinking about, you know, your neighbors today, but who are likely to be that next generation of folks and what their needs will be, so that we plan for that, for their needs as well as our own. Understanding the importance of preservation. You have an amazing constellation of images in this town that, you know, if I lived here, I would certainly want to be concerned about preservation. But also understanding that growth happens. I think of master plans, by the way, not so much as planning for growth, but managing change. Because I've worked in communities where people think, there's no more land left, so nothing's going to happen here. We're all built out, right? And those are the communities that are sometimes the hardest ones to plan in. Because every change is visible to lots of people. There's no big forest separating folks from the subdivision next door. Everyone sees change. So I think a valuable way to think about a master plan is how do you manage change? And understanding kind of, you know, that's really helpful to think about who's going to be here in the future, too, and how you accommodate their needs, because they're the ones who are going to be living with the changes that you're planning for today. Understanding how to get there. Implementation is kind of a key element of a plan. We try in our implementation elements to sort of map out for you what needs to be done and who does it and where's the responsibility lie. If there's a funding requirement, kind of what that might be or where those funds will come from. I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. And always building into your plan a way of thinking about how you're going to monitor it. I think we've all had experiences as consultants going into communities where one of the first things people say to us is, how do we keep our plan from sitting on a shelf? And the key to that, in my experience, is thinking upfront about the implementation capacity of the community. So you're not setting people up to do things that perhaps they're not ready to do or that they don't have the resource base to do, but also recognizing that monitoring a plan is very important and that sometimes things come up in year 2 or 3 or 5 that you simply couldn't foresee today. And so the plan's value is not only the script it gives you, but the process for amending the plan or seeing kind of what did we do and maybe what didn't work out and why not? Were there things that came up that we couldn't see? Maybe something needed more thought. I mean, you have to have a way to evaluate the plan. And so we build that into our master plan process. And then part of monitoring your progress is being open to perhaps amending a plan so that you're not only kind of 20 years out saying it's time to update the plan again, but it's been alive the whole time because there's been an evaluation process in place every year, every couple of years for people to say, where are we now with this implementation? So to me, that's kind of what the whole plan consists of. And I will just say, anytime you guys want to jump in because you think I've forgotten something, which very easily could happen, please do. So every journey starts with a step, and there are these basic steps that we take when we're doing this planning process. As I said, there's the visioning piece of this. Understanding kind of where the community is today. I'll talk about each of these more in a minute. Data analysis, these tend to be data-rich kind of documents. Understanding what the potential opportunities are in your community, many of which may be readily apparent to you folks, and some perhaps not. Hopefully we'll be able to help you identify opportunities that may not be apparent today. And then from the possible opportunities that you have, what's sort of the preferred direction for the town? And that kind of becomes the plan. Our job is then to help you think through how to get there. The implementation program is really the steps to getting there, and then, as I said, monitoring an update as well. So the community baseline, the existing conditions assessment, is kind of the first, I guess I'd call it sort of data crunching aspect of what we're going to be doing here, and this is going to go on for a few months. We tried, and all of those elements that I talked about earlier, that, just to be clear, the elements required in the statute are a land use element, which includes both kind of an understanding of where you are today and a future land use plan, a housing element, economic development, natural and cultural resources, open space and recreation, public facilities and transportation. Please tell me I didn't forget something.
I didn't.
I don't think so. So we'll be working on these pieces. And what our goal is to kind of understand really where you are. So there's a big sort of inventory process that will take place over the next few months on each one of those elements. And we divide up as a team to sort of pull the information together, compare notes, and try to keep ourselves rolling, you know, in a consistent direction as we go forward. There's a lot of mapping work. One of the things that makes this a plan for a town as opposed to a plan for something else is that there's maps. So there's a heavy sort of geographic component to this. Understanding, too, sometimes we will go beyond traditional public data sources. There's lots of public data, and we certainly use it because it's important, and you all have access to it. So there's a way to kind of be transparent when you're using public data. But sometimes we will use what I call proprietary sources as well. And a good example of where we might do that is the economic development element. Sometimes there are just data sources we purchase because they're just richer data sources to use. So we will typically dive into sometimes those private sources as well in order to best inform the inventory that we're doing. And then always, as we're meeting with you or working in public sessions, listening to the kinds of questions that people ask, because that helps us understand what's kind of the pulse of this community today and what are the things that people are concerned about. There's lots of directions these plans can go. Your job as a consultant is to try to get it right as to really what are the key things that you folks are the most concerned about, and how do we understand that? We're listening to the questions that people ask.
So I just wanted to add that part of the process, it's iterative. So we start with the vision and goal setting, but then we keep coming back and we keep saying, do we get it right? And very, very important, what are the priorities? What are the shared priorities? Which most people agree is most important.
And Judy, I just want to mention another thing, too, about the inventory process. We're going to be working on that over the next several months. And we do a lot of mining of data, we also rely on you to help us identify trends, needs, concerns, sources, and that sort of thing. So, for example, with historic and cultural resources, I will be one of the things I'll be doing is compiling a very brief narrative about the history of the town so we can understand what's important about it historically as a way of informing decisions in the future about land use, et cetera, transportation maybe marine resources.
Economic
that's
development.
That's seawall.
Yeah.
So a lot of the information that I look at I look at what the town has done to date in terms of preservation, and what some of the holes might be in that, what some of the opportunities might be, and then, you know, checking in with you to make sure that we're on the right track with that. So that's just an example. I'm sure all of my teammates could provide others as well with their elements, but it's a very important part of the process, and we do rely on you for both providing information that we can use and also commenting on what we've come up with.
And identifying sources, like you said, that might be individuals, let's say in her case, individuals in town who have just that knowledge they carried around in their head, and so it's not on a piece of paper somewhere.
So on that note, I would just point out, and I think you may be aware of this, we have scheduled some meetings, one set next week and another set on October 9th. We call them core assessments. They're part of this baseline process. So when we go to those meetings, we're just learning about the town. So we're going in and almost like as a blank slate saying, you need to help us. You know, tell us what you know that's important about this topic. And what the information we get from those meetings is going to help will help us be very efficient in going about trying to find the sort of factual data to support the analysis that we need to do. But I just want to make that clear that there's this input piece in addition to factoids. And we try to put all those together to do the best baseline analysis we can.
So that's sort of one of the first to-dos, right? So if you all look at what the different subjects of those core assessment meetings are, and if you know folks that you think have something to contribute to get the team up to speed, local experts on any of those topics, I encourage you to pass those names on to Mary. Mary will be the clearinghouse for probably all communication that we do. She can feed it to the team and then back. But you all know those folks, right? That the team needs to hear from. So I would urge you to give that some thought as you're looking at that core assessment schedule.
Yeah, those are really important meetings to us. I think getting back to that issue of how do you keep a plan from sitting on a shelf, that my whole philosophy about doing these plans is that the implementation piece doesn't come at the end. It really starts now. So all the time that we're working on the baseline analysis and gathering information about your community, in the back of our heads is, so what's the capacity here to do X or Y? I mean, what is the capacity of the town? So we're going to be keeping kind of our ears open for that, and the core assessment meetings are part of what will help us understand, well, what has the town done about various issues, and what have the barriers been, or what have the success stories been, so we begin to get a sense of just what the implementation capacity is here. So moving on, the next sort of steps here, we're gathering all this information, and we go into this analysis mode, and if you're data geek, you love this part of master planning, but trying to understand what everything kind of means. We've heard a lot. We see a lot. Our attempt in this phase is really to understand kind of maybe where we still need some information or where our information gaps might be. Understanding kind of the trend lines in the community and all those different elements that I referred to earlier. To the extent that it's appropriate and relevant, we would use whatever existing sources you have. I mean, you're a town that cares about planning, and you've done a lot of work here, which is really, to a planner, a wonderful thing to come into. Oftentimes we go into a community and they haven't had the resources or the ability to do much planning. So we'll rely heavily on what does exist, whether it's done by the regional planning agency or some other group or your own town. We try to look to those things so we're not, quote, reinventing the wheel, and understanding where perhaps we should be devoting our efforts to get information so that we have an even picture of a particular topic.
Excuse me. Will you be integrating any information that would have been gathered in abutting towns? An example is the town of Hall can't go anywhere without having an aqua lung or going through the town of Hingham. And so there's some interaction in abutting towns.
Mm-hmm.
Is there somehow you are going to build a mechanism in to take what their relationship with this town is?
To an extent, yes. I mean, if there's an issue where you have an active relationship going on, whether it's transportation
or
kind of
sewer,
traffic or something, wastewater sharing or things like that, interlocal agreements, if there's an active relationship going on and steps being taken that might either create opportunities for you in the future or barriers, then we would certainly look at that. Naturally, the focus needs to be on Hingham, but all of our towns have a tendency to think that the world ends at their town line, and we need to make sure that we don't succumb to that too. So if there's some particular regional opportunities or constraints, we certainly would look at that, because you kind of need to be able to think about what might be coming down the pike that would affect your choices later, or the choices of the next generation of people who will be leading the town. So also just to point out, as part of this kind of data analysis crunching period, is looking at your existing regulatory approach. What is your regulatory approach in this community? What's your policy framework for land use, for historic preservation, whatever? How does the regulatory framework work here to either shape what you are, or in ways that you may like or not like, versus how much of what you are is really just this sort of organic historic past that you've tried very hard to preserve. But we need to understand your regulatory framework, because that may either be a help or a hindrance in terms of getting to your future vision. So that is part of this process, is looking at your regulatory structure here. So from there, we try to do what we call sort of connecting the dots. It's like, what are the opportunities that you have? And this is where we try to connect the analysis, the baseline analysis that we've done for the existing conditions, with sort of an analysis of what it all means. So we might look at things like, do you have commercial areas that are underperforming or are in some way in play? for change? Are there facilities that are quote outdated? You know, and that doesn't mean you tear it down, but I mean, do you have a facility that may not be able to meet the future needs of the community in terms of some public service? How do you deal with that? Is there a new facility that's needed? Is there a retrofit of an existing facility? We're trying to understand what the opportunities are. Do you have undeveloped land, and how does that play into the planning for change? Are there potential greenway connections that haven't quite been identified or exploited yet here, and how might those perhaps benefit both a sustainability and a transportation approach for the future? Understanding potential connections in the community and what it would take to sort of achieve those, and looking at the market, you know, and if we always have to be careful that we don't become, as communities, too enslaved to the market, but you need to know what's going on with the market, because sometimes opportunities only happen once. So looking at kind of all these different ways that that opportunities are available to you to address your vision and kind of begin to connect together the existing conditions and the needs analysis that we've done. And out of that potential set of opportunities, which may be more than one direction, it becomes your role. You know, working with us will help you. You need to sort of select a plan. What's sort of the approach? And then that helps us advise you on what the sort of policy frameworks are that might get you there, identifying potential strategies that should be in the plan. If there's tensions around some issues, try to work those out and reduce them. I will tell you that in every master plan I've worked on, and I think you've probably had the same experience, some things don't get resolved. If you think we're going to get through a year here and everybody is going to love everybody and everybody's going to be happy and they're all going to be walking around with the same sign and the same, you know, it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes what happens is there's agreement about some key things and there are things that simply aren't ripe to be worked out. What we need to do in that situation is build into the plan an acknowledgement that there are issues the town is going to continue to need to work on, perhaps build into the implementation program some early steps to sort of work toward a resolution or to get more information. You know, a master plan.
It is about education.
Oh, sure.
So sometimes there are the communities that didn't pass, say, the CPA, right? Mm-hmm. They're all about conservation, historic preservation, affordable housing, but they don't pass the CPA.
Yeah.
Because they didn't understand that that's what it was for.
We've been through this, too.
So, sometimes it's about that.
Sometimes it is definitely about public education. And whatever it is, I think we just have to acknowledge that there may be some things left on the table, and how do you, what can we leave you with to help you continue to try to work through those things? Are there areas in the town where growth should occur, can occur without the expense of some other outcome that the community really cares about? Where are the areas that are particularly important and appropriate for preservation? What are sort of the short and longer term steps that you can take? I'm always kind of thinking about, you know, who benefits from these pieces of the plan that you want to promote. So this is kind of, you know, gets you to the implementation element, which is, people think of, you know, this is the end, but as I said, it's not. It really is all the way through the process. In an implementation element of a plan, typically, it almost looks like a table. It's like a matrix or something. And so you talk about what's the action that needs to happen, and how does that relate to your goals? Who are the responsible parties to carry the banner for this particular action in the plan? What next steps need to be taken? Is there a funding need? How the staffing is going to work? Are there particular staff assignments that need to be made to particular actions to make sure that they get done? Are you going to need more professional assistance? Those are all things that tend to get built into the implementation program of the plan, so that in the end you kind of know how you're going to be able to check off the items that are in that schedule and say, year after year after year, these are the things that we accomplished. These are the things we still have to work on. So that's really kind of the architecture of the planning process that we just wanted to, you know, to leave you with. If you had any questions about that, I'd be happy to answer them. But I think other than that, we probably should think about pretty soon here getting into what is going to be the heart of the work tonight, which is beginning to work on the community engagement plan. I keep looking at Daphne because I'm going to turn the meeting over to her in a minute.
Let's just pause for a moment to make sure that, you know, folks are comfortable with that kind of sequence and process. There will be visioning sessions. There will be the core assessments, as Judy explained. There will be just public sessions where at different intervals where this information will be presented to the to folks to provide comment. I expect there will be ongoing running comment flow through the website. I just wanted to make sure that folks were comfortable with that. There was a lot of information before we move on to the community engagement piece.
What kind of proprietary data would you sometimes buy?
Well, we, for example, have a license with CoStar for market data. And through CoStar, we have access to other market data sources as well. So if we were trying to understand, vacant space for office, I'll just pick on this as an example, how much vacant space is there in the region in this particular area? If everybody said, we want to have a big office park, we might come back and say, I don't think this is going to work because you've got X million square feet of vacant space. We would look also to that for cost of development, whether it's on the residential side or non-residential side. That license gives us access to real estate data for office, retail, industrial, and multifamily development. So that's just an example of one. We have licenses to other services like social demographics, social explorer rather, which really is just sort of a nice way to get at census data, but it's frankly a very user-friendly way to get at it. So we have that. We also have Esri Business Analyst, which is a great way to get kind of a market profile of a community. So I don't know if the rest of you want to comment on that, but I'm swimming in these data licenses because we just need them.
In your wider engagement, have you ever used any of the survey tools to get a wider population? This is a small population in this room compared to the town.
Yep.
And none of us want to warrant and represent how the majority of the town might feel. And most people would not typically participate. But is there a point, for example, after we develop the vision, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, stage one, that a survey could be done of the wider town population using some tools that are available.
We do have survey tools.
So that we can see whether the town in a larger population agrees with that. Mm-hmm. Democracy was never run by the majority, but at the other end of the scale, we probably could use some data that says, this is the general tenor of how the town feels. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's just a question.
No, it's one of the things.
It's a great segue.
So one of the things when I talk about.
Perfect segue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that is a perfect segue to why it is that although we between us here amongst us have done over 50 master plans, made I think once we counted like 85 or something.
Scary.
You know, if we put us all together. Why we don't just come here and do it and tell you, okay, let's understand your town and tell you what's best. Because that would have nothing to do with what the people here think is best. And the people who live here, work here, play here, need to be the ones making those decisions. We can give our advice, we can tell you, oh, well, that's what they do elsewhere, but you have to be the ones deciding what you do here. So it can't be just the people in this room, but the people in this room have to be the ones inviting, convincing, welcoming, explaining to your neighbors, your friends, your family, coworkers, people you know in all kinds of ways, why it's important. And why it's important is what Judy said earlier. Tonight we ate in a Thai restaurant. Alexis, what was the name of the restaurant?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember. It's a Thai restaurant.
Thai restaurant near the coffee shop.
Yeah.
And what was the name of the
restaurant? Next door to the pizza place.
Yeah.
Oh, Mom Thai.
Yes.
That's
Mom
it.
Thai.
So this was my fortune. Change is not merely necessary to life, it is life. So.
Good, you got the right one. Good.
I did get the right one. You did that,
you
right?
You set that up.
Everybody got one of those.
Glad I didn't go to the other table, because that would have been awful.
Just to add to that mindset, despair is criminal.
Yeah. We tried to figure that one out. That just wasn't so easy. And we couldn't really apply it. You know. It's a good thing. So it is true, and, it is about managing change. And it's also true that a lot of times in places that are so beautiful as Hingham is, most people go around thinking, wow, I don't want to change anything. This is great. So why would I bother going to a master plan meeting that's about making change? Because it doesn't mean that you do nothing, that nothing changes.
Right.
In fact, doing nothing means things are going to change because you're not making decisions about it. You're not saying, this is what I want not to change, and this is what I want to change. You're just saying, okay, let it happen. So that's another thing that you need to message to people. That you may like the way things are now, it doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. So that's why people need to be actively involved. So how are we going to have that happen? We got to start at the beginning. So you have some things in your packet. I'd like to start by saying, okay, what are the goals for this process? I just said a few of them. Are there any more that you would like to add? Why do we want people involved in this? What are the goals of engaging the community? We want,
The more voices, the more input, the better outcome you have.
And why is it a better outcome?
Because everyone feels ownership in the decision. If they are hurt, and if they can't feel that they at least had a chance to participate.
And then they're more likely to support
the
recommendations, because those recommendations are not going to be in one huge, they're going to be piecemeal, they're going to be incremental. So people need to continually understand that each recommendation as it moves forward needs to be vetted, it needs to be voted at town meeting, how that relates to the overall. So if they're not part of that overall, they don't understand why you're widening the street there for a bike path. Well, that's because it's part of a system. It's part of a whole discussion. So we need to be reminding them. So that's very important. Anybody else want to add a goal to the process?
Not for the plan, but just for
the process. No, for the process.
Hi. So we just completed a superintendent search last year, and we went out of our way to engage the community, especially the school community, but also the community at large. So I may jump in. I'm going to give you just a couple of things that I noticed in this because we just went through it.
Good.
So the online survey, yes, that's critical, especially when, you know, you listed here hard to reach population are young parents. That was very effective for us of keeping it simple, to the point, and accessible, because they can't always show up at a meeting even though they want to.
Now, of course, sorry for interrupting, but of course the young parents were especially sensitive to your survey because it was a subject dear to their heart.
Yes, and I understand that, but even
but I
just
no,
the fact
but it's
of
a well taken point. Right.
I think we should, with communications, we need to keep it simple and understandable, and in language that the people that we're trying to reach understand, as opposed to language that the people in this room understand. And so I really liked your slide of what is a master plan and keeping it in that common language so that everyone understands what we're doing. Because so far the discussions in town, and I'm not criticizing anyone, but it's like, well, wait, what is this? Because, and also just from the superintendent search and from all the outreach with the water company, there was talk about foster school, because we have a school that
that's flooding, the fields
and
are flooding.
So the schools have facilities master plans. We call them master plans.
Right, exactly.
So there's confusion over, well, what is this master plan in this room doing?
So that's the perfect segue.
Different, and so that's where keeping it common.
So in addition to that, you gave us the perfect segue to talk about branding. So because of that, but also because people are so busy People are so busy, and we have so many messages coming at us from our phones, from our screens, and it's constant, right? We're bombarded. We have to find a way to distinguish this process and make it so that people understand when they see this logo and this tagline that we will develop, it's about this master plan, and also to add words that explain what a master plan is. Because master plan, frankly, it doesn't really sound very appealing, and it does sound a bit like from the top down.
Absolutely.
And what we want to message is that it's from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. So if we find a way, and we've done this in many communities, and we want to talk to you tonight about just spending a few minutes kind of brainstorming words and images that we could give to a graphic designer who will come back with three alternatives, and then we can tweak those and come up with, we have to do it fast, and it doesn't have to be perfect. And it's not branding the town, let's be sure. It's just this process. So don't feel like, well, this is now Hingham. No, no, no. That could be something you do at another point. Right now, this is just the last year, so this logo, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. But it does have to be attractive, appealing, and it has to express Hingham, right, in some way. So let's talk about what's some possible. What time is it, Martha?
Well, very quickly, okay.
Yes.
We talk about designing the concept visually,
uh-huh,
whatever the master plan is. You still have to communicate that.
Yes.
And one of the things that, I don't know whether Liza experienced it or not with the school committee, but communicating today is very different than it was.
Absolutely.
Even 15 years ago. That's correct. And how do you have in your mind how you're going to convey the graphic image of the intent of a master plan to the consumer? Will you use Twitter? Will you use Facebook?
Yes, and we will get all into that. We'll get all into that tonight.
Okay. Just, I don't want to forget these things.
No,
you're right.
And you're right, because those are very important things. And it is critical that we communicate differently today. But it also, it doesn't mean, we're still humans, no matter what. No matter how virtual we get. No matter how virtual we get, we're still humans and we still need face-to-face. So we need to try to get people to attend face-to-face as much as possible and supplement with those other ways. That's just my summary on that, but we'll get back to that. So let's brainstorm.
I have a question. In monitoring a plan you mentioned earlier, at what point in the master plan schedule, if there's a sense that there isn't widespread community engagement, how do you reboot?
So after each session, we say who was there, who wasn't there, and if they weren't there, where are they? And where can we go and meet them? And when I say go and meet them, it doesn't necessarily actually mean physically go, but somehow reach out to them if they were missing. So and one of the things we're going to identify tonight is what are the different ways that you slice up as a community, and what are different kind of channels of communication. And we want to be able to use all of them and then see, okay, who didn't we reach? And then what's the best way of reaching them, that demographic? So we will do that. And if you start to feel that at some point, you just need to say so. Say, you know what, I noticed, because we don't know everything about Hingham. In fact, we don't know much at all yet. So if you see some at some point and you say, you know what I saw missing, say so. And then we need to discuss as a group, well, how do we best reach them? And all along, the whole process. Because sometimes what happens is there's a swell in the beginning, and then people say, well, I went to a master plan meeting. Why do I need to go to another one? They don't realize it's an iterative process, and that each way along the way, they're responding to a different level of information, but they don't always understand that.
But there will also be outreach pieces that you folks will do.
That's right.
That we'll get into as we start developing this plan, that I think will help to increase the types of people
broadened,
being reached by this process. So, because they don't all come to big public meetings.
No.
I mean, that is just reality. So
exactly.
We always have to kind of tailor the process to a combination of come to us and we'll come to you. And we'll come to you in a variety of different ways.
But and tailoring is exactly right. I mean, in some communities, it's about linguistic barriers. In other communities, remember in Northfield, we had to reach the motorcycle gang.
Right.
Now, we couldn't go, but we had some people from the committee who, you know, knew them, and they went. And so we have to tailor. So you have to help us identify who it is that's missing.
What do you consider kind of that critical mass? Like, is there a certain percentage of the population that?
So we don't think of it so much in terms of numbers,
yeah.
But in terms of are the different points of view represented? So, you know, if there's a particular, let's just say, and this is probably the case, there are some people who would like more development, and there's some who would like less. And there's some who would like a certain kind of development, and there's some who would not like that kind of development. So if we could get a mix of all of that, in that particular issue, then that we would feel, if they were represented, then we could have that conversation and find that sweet spot. See what I mean? Now, we try for the numbers because that just increases the possibility or the probability of getting those points of view. But not necessarily, right? Because in some communities, the committee seems to know everybody on a first-name basis at the meeting because those people just show up all the time. So we need to try to get out of that first ring?
Yeah.
First ring.
We need to have people show up that you don't know.
Right.
So some of the town committees broadcast on Harbor Media the committee meetings. And if you don't get to see them live, you know, you can watch them on YouTube later. So, you know, I don't know what your experience with that is.
So I think it's better to use the KMTV not for our committee meetings, but definitely for the public forums and also for messaging. And we'll talk about that too. You know, either have a conversation in their studio or if they can go outside, take them around town and have them talk to people on the streets. So use it in a different way. I think to do the committee meeting, sometimes, you know, we may want to talk about things that, I don't know. Let's say we want to, sometimes we talk about having a surprise at a public forum. So then we ruin the surprise, right? Or we say, you know, let's have a raffle, and we talk about what all the... But we don't want them to know what the raffle is. We want them to arrive and just be surprised. So, I don't know.
Well,
and let's go back to...
Communications is very demographic today, more so than ever before.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I think in order to create an effect... This is about communicating what we're doing and why and the importance of it. So I don't take this casually. But the fact is, demographics are driving the form of communication that you need. And I'm a little hesitant from what I hear. We probably need to understand the demographics in this town a bit more than we do now in order to set up the different values of communication and venues and how it's done. Otherwise, we're not going to get very far.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's what we want to talk about. But let's go just back to the logo and the tagline for a minute.
Sure.
Actually, 15 minutes. And then after that, we'll get to who it is we're trying to get and how to best communicate to them. So if you want to, let's try and think about ones we've used before, so give you some examples. So, I mean, building the future together, honoring our past. Let's see. We had one that where a river was running through it. So following the flow, you know, kind of using what is here, but also talking about, I mean, we have a lot of historic resources, and we're talking about the future. So what are some different words that we could use that people would...
That evoke imagery that is recognizable to people.
Right, that they would resonate with them.
Depends on which demographic you're targeting first. This is a huge... I sit on an international communications committee in 18 different languages. Who are we communicating the message to first, second, third? All right.
So who would you think we should communicate the message to first?
Well, to be effective, everybody.
Okay.
But you're going to have different messages through this process. Different concepts will be presented to different age groups specifically and different vehicles of communication. They are not, you can't do it with one piece of sign language today.
But we do need an overriding logo and tagline that's recognizable, and then we'll use, and then we will, customize the message. But we do need a brand just to an overall grant.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Can I just explain why? So as I believe it was Liza earlier mentioned that people in town were confused about, because the schools have their own master plans and things like that. The purpose of having a logo for a master plan process is so that any, you know, agenda, anything publicized on the website, anything like that with that logo, people immediately recognize, oh, this is for the master plan process.
For the town.
So the purpose of it is not to, like, squish Hingham into a box. It's simply so that people see it and recognize what it's for. Just like any branding, you know, so that's what we're talking about. So we're not trying to, you know, confine you in any way or only target certain demographics. It's purely the purpose of branding for recognizability of this process.
And if you look at Liz's laptop, what do you see?
Well, that's a rather iconic.
But I'm just saying, that is exactly what we're talking about.
Right, so, in some other towns that, you know, that we work with that have a master plan logo, for example, you know, working with Bridgewater, they have a master plan logo, and it's just on every publication we put out. And so not only would we have the town seal, so, you know, people know it's official, we have the master plan logo as well, and people just know right away what it's for. So it's just a way of conveying.
And Littleton has done it too, and actually all their implementation work, all, anything that they're doing that relates to implementing their comprehensive plan has that same logo on it. So they've kept it alive.
Afterwards,
it's just a way to say this is a part of the plan. Okay.
And in some communities, it's that we worked in, say, Kittery, they made a T-shirt, and people went crazy for it. Then, you know, we had refrigerator magnets and pens. In Acton, they did those big banners on the street lamps. So it just becomes a thing, you know, that it's just a recognizable imagery. And it's not about the message yet. The message is that we're welcoming to talk about the future of the town. That's all the message is, and that's what a master plan is. Because the word master plan just sounds so...
All right, here's a couple.
I was going to suggest...
Our history, your future.
Ooh, our history, your future.
Moving our history forward.
Wait, our history, your future. Hold on.
Moving our history forward. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine's more wordy, but engaging the past to lead us into the future.
Engaging the past?
Yes, to lead us into the future. And a suggested logo would be a circle with a map, an outline map of Hingham in red with blue at the top.
Slow down. Say that again. Circle.
You're into this. This is great.
Circle. So a circle.
Yeah.
We have a town seal. It's a circle.
Yeah.
And an outline of the map of Hingham.
In the circle.
Yeah, inside the circle. That's filled in red. And then, but blue at the top where the harbor.
In Bridgewater, they have in their master plan seal the part of the common, I believe it's the eye, right? So, you know, things like that, that visually are a big part of the town that anyone would identify. So they're having the water, so the blue for the water representation, you know, things like that.
The other thing to do is think of images of Hingham that just come into your mind. Like, what do you think of when you think of Hingham physically? Mm-hmm. What is it?
So the harbor seems to be one. A lot of towns use the like an image of the town hall as their thing, but that's the clock, right?
Something in so many.
That's where it gets tricky.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
That's okay.
So that's why you did the map.
Well, also the map
100 years ago.
That's the point of what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
so
right.
That's true.
Well, right. So Deirdre makes a point, right? So 100 years ago, or whatever the seal was created, it was school, church, town band, town meeting, right?
Yeah.
So, nice. and I'm not changing the town seal. We're not changing the town seal.
No.
I just saw that note.
If we were going to create a town seal in 2019, one of those words that would be up.
Mm.
Well, on that note, the town seal is too busy for this.
Fair, but I'm just using it as a prompt, right? Church, school, town meeting, and town bank, right? So
train bank,
right. So
what words would be on it now?
Yeah.
You know,
But I think Martha was just saying graphically that we should be aware that it shouldn't be too busy.
Much simpler.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. They don't work if they're busy.
And they have to be both black and white and in color. They
and
have to
also
work.
About usable in a lot of different formats.
Right. And sizes.
Right.
So we have
but we'll work on that part.
Yeah, we'll work on that part. So I'll tell you what we have so far. Our history, your future. Moving our history forward. Engaging the past to lead us into the future. And then we have a circle with a red map and a blue harbor.
And, yeah, that's the imagery of the harbor, yeah.
But we're a seafaring town. Why don't we put a compass on it?
Compass, ooh.
With north.
Or an anchor, like anchored in the past. Yeah.
Ooh, anchor.
Oh, anchored in the past.
In the past.
Looking to the future.
Looking to the future? Well, we're all brainstorming, so.
Spyglass.
I don't think we should be overweighting history.
Okay.
There's a lot of this town that, you know, goes beyond history.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, people come here not just because it's historic.
So how do we express that?
Climate, water, school.
School, I mean, right, so schools on this is on the town seal no matter what, I would say, right? You know, it's, we've all benefited from it. People are coming to a great extent because of that.
Yep.
I don't know how it works into the logo per se, but that it is quality of life, mm-hmm. you know, at all stages of life.
At all stages. That's a nice one, quality of life. So that takes schools out because it's broader than that.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I think that would hit on all demographics because we can't forget who built this town. Like, I've lived here most of my life. My parents created it. Mm-hmm. We can't just address the school-age
right.
people.
Right.
Because they're, I think the older generations think the town's gone.
Right.
And we need to include them in this conversation.
So what would be an image to the words quality of life at all stages of life? What would be an image that would accompany those words?
Just a map of life.
I'm sorry?
I think like it's
what's the question?
What would be an image that would accompany the words quality of life at all stages of life? Were you thinking of that one with it?
No, I hate that.
No, I know.
It's so over.
It's so over you.
But I think you. It's a new map of life. You know, it's that we people. It is. We do have to get at that. Hingham represents every age on the spectrum, and the spectrum is getting longer. And but I think the future, like emphasizing the future. You know,
I like
looking
the word
on, like, you know, there's something like Hingham 2040. Because then people have no doubt it's a future plan. Hmm.
A lot of towns use that.
Yeah.
Well, they use 2020 when that was. Yeah. But we're too late for that.
Right.
How about the once in future Hingham?
The once in once, future?
I love
the
it.
Once
what's
in future,
future
Hingham. Stealing a little bit.
Borrow it.
Yeah, in case you hear Camelot now in the background.
Or we can tie it into climate change and say 2050 is our day.
2032.
Well, that's the first phase.
So let me read back what we have so far and see if there's anything other more to add. We actually have quite a lot, even though it might not feel like it, for a graphic designer to start something with. Our history, your future. Interrupt anytime with a piggyback idea or something that might be inspired by. Moving our history forward. Engaging the past to lead us into the future. A circle, a red map of Hingham with a blue harbor image. A compass. I'm not going to say where the compass is showing.
An anchor
that's with the words anchored in the past, looking to the future.
There's a popular
new site now that's called The Anchor, though. My only concern. Yeah. And there's a general store in Cohasset called The Anchor.
Could get too confusing. Okay, so.
In one place.
Keeps them on an even keel.
It's more a ship's wheel sort of.
Even keel. Oh, that's good. Quality of life at all stages of life. A new map of life. Spectrum is getting longer. Let's see a bit, an image of that. Hingham 2040. Emphasize the future. The once in a future Hingham. Any other thoughts about images or words?
The ship's wheel is the school's logo.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I know I love it for some reason.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll note that. Ship's wheel. School's logo.
And some of the schools have their own, they use the compass. There's one school that uses the compass. And there's one school that uses an anchor. But I think
It depends on how it's done, but it's just so you're aware.
No, that's good to know. So we can look at those if, and not do them. I mean, not do it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do you know which school is the anchor?
Foster.
And which is the compass?
East school.
East.
Nice.
Any other last thoughts before we move on to discussing the demographics we want to reach and how? Any other thoughts on the logo, tagline?
I think that's probably a great start for
graphic
designer. Folks to chew on and give us some options.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about the process for that? Or
the Hubbers on
no.
the postcard.
Okay.
So, the postcard.
As I said, we'll have three alternatives to you, and we'll figure out how to move forward from that. So we have a lot to cover, and we don't have a lot of time because we would like to honor and respect the 9 o'clock for you and for us. So we talked about the goals. What about some target audiences? You know who's going to show up no matter what. We'll find out soon. You already
know. Show up to what?
What's that?
Show up to what?
To a meeting, to a public meeting. Or to a call for input.
Or is that the people who you know will find a way to give their input because that's what they do.
You know, we'll find out soon who they are.
Whatever way they can give input.
Right. The known audience. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So now, who outside of those people? Who are people we need to reach? You mentioned the older adults.
Mm-hmm. Well, our population. I don't have the exact statistics, but. What is our elder population growing? It's a bigger percent in the town of Hingham than it is in any other communities.
Mm-hmm. So there is a senior center right around the corner, correct?
Yep, and they have breakfast monthly.
A monthly men's breakfast. I noticed that.
Which
I thought that was interesting.
Welcome to the history
of
Hingham.
It's very It's a lovely group. I've been to them before, and we could get onto an agenda with them.
Linden Ponds.
So why is it only men, if I may ask?
Men are important.
Well, they have a lot of activities, and then you could camp out there.
Do they not have a luncheon for that's co-ed?
He's on the invite list.
No, I've only gone this week to the men's breakfast.
Oh, okay.
But we do have it right here. We can distribute surveys.
Right.
We can have meetings at Linden Ponds and engage that community. And certainly we can work with the senior center director and find out if they're having an event. Like today they had a big luncheon.
And do they have a newsletter?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sure they do.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So that's an important constituency.
They have a polling system for you.
So what about young families?
I'm sorry.
Can young families, can we use the backpacks?
We can do electronic messaging. So we can do a message from the superintendent to all families. We have 6 PTOs. The school department has a list of all the preschools, so we have those contact information. We can get messages out and ask them to distribute to their families.
Do you happen to know what percentage of the population attends the public schools? Approximately.
I don't know the
Because it seemed, I saw there were five private schools in town, parochial/private.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the, well, we have 4,300 students.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how many families
right.
is that? Yeah, it's the wide majority, or it's probably like 80-90%.
Okay, so majority.
We actually can get an estimate from that, from the
community
survey.
Yeah, we can get an estimate of that.
Okay.
A number of the private schools draw in from.
Yeah,
well,
from the regional, oh,
yeah.
Sure.
But we have very limited number of private schools, so.
Okay.
And the PTOs are robust, right? They reach a lot of folks,
yeah.
and folks pay attention. So I think that's a group that, and,
yeah.
and again, that's some of those are going to be new folks. Those are not the usual.
Right. So let's say newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
How do we reach newcomers?
There's a newcomers club here.
There's a newcomers club?
Is it active?
Yes.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of overlap among these groups, but I think one of the least represented frequently is just working people.
Yeah.
People who are commuting, you know, they get to the boat at 7:30, they get home at 6:30 or 7. They typically don't show up for many meetings because they're too tired or they're going to sports or whatever.
Right.
And they're otherwise involved taxpaying people, but
right.
they just
mm-hmm.
don't have the energy to do it. And
mm-hmm.
getting them involved, I think, is critical.
So what about using that commuter boat
to
send a message?
Boats and trains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great, and
great.
The landfill.
Yeah. And the landfill.
Landfill.
Yes. Do you have that here, too?
Yeah.
Yes.
And we have a train, too, did you hear?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Is the boat mostly Hingham residents that take it, or is it from all over?
It's from all over.
That's
a huge
population.
No, but it's a bunch, right? I mean, you can see us riding back and forth on a couple of the either morning or evening commutes. People are chattier in the evening, in my experience. You know.
They're chattier in the evening?
Yeah.
Bars
and bars. Exactly.
So what if we got on the boat and what if we held a session on the boat?
The morning boats are whisper quiet. Although the whole boat is vibrant in the morning.
Interesting cultural difference.
Different
community.
Morning.
Very
different
community.
They're large.
Happier boats. But in the evening, I mean, you could do that. You could do that
a couple
of times. It's a half hour captive audience,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
In fact, they've been known to go aground.
Sure.
They've been known to go aground.
Oh. Wait, open the bar. Let's see what kind of...
I
do think that's a way of getting at that audience that you're talking about.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, that's a good one, Mary.
So Mary just said the light plant flyer
they do
that goes
bills
to every household, right? Now, some people say that you don't want it to be associated with the bill, but maybe we could put another piece of paper between
the
two.
I think the light plant is held in fairly high esteem.
Yeah.
It is?
Yes, it is.
But I think,
didn't
they go online, though? Am I wrong? The last couple months, you can sign up online for more events, and it's not tied to the bill. It's we know it's good community information when you get your light bill. I know it sounds crazy, but
no, it doesn't.
Good.
They need a little bit of lead time.
Yeah.
So they have like an online announcements, or what is it?
You can go online too to get more announcements, but they
we used
do,
that
right?
on the last master plan.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you did.
Successfully, you got a big response.
So I did notice, now that you mentioned that in the open space and rec plan, the draft one that's now 2016-2023, that the Hingham Journal was used, right? The town's website.
That's a different newspaper now.
Yeah.
It's a different newspaper now. What is it called?
It's still
called that, but...
Oh.
So that's still a vehicle?
Birdcage.
But there's also an online paper, the Hingham Anchor.
There goes another anchor.
Online.
There was an article last week, right?
The online communities.
We did an article on the last
discussion boards, and those are very active for every demographic.
So are those like next door
neighbors?
What's that?
Different Facebook pages.
Mm-hmm. But are they Facebook pages that are the town Facebook pages or neighborhood Facebook pages?
They are either
community.
They're community.
Yeah.
But I made a list of, I think, if
we can, if you can create messages, and then we can get them out.
So,
so
are
you provide the content on a regular basis, and then
that's what we're
hoping.
Make
sure we hit those different register owns.
So could I ask you if you would volunteer to be the liaison to the school department and to those Facebook pages? Or just the school department?
I can, get on this Facebook page. I can do some of the Facebook pages.
Okay. How many Facebook pages are there?
There's one by neighborhood. There's two or three that are discussion boards.
Those can go sideways and easy.
Well, that's another good thing to know. What are the venues that, for lack of a better word, can turn toxic quickly and not productive? So we don't want to be engaging in platforms that are not productive.
Gordon, during the water company promotion, those Facebook pages were managed very well. This isn't something controversial necessarily. I mean, we're gathering information as opposed to having a position that people are judging us on.
True.
And so
it may not be from an outreach perspective, and it might just be
you know, you're invited to participate in this way rather than sending out
we're not asking them to comment on what do you think about building a senior center.
No, exactly, not yet.
You could push out a survey link.
Exactly,
a link to a survey, an invitation to participate in some way, whether it be attendance at a meeting or to participate in a survey.
So could the master plan committee have its own Facebook? And the reason I ask that is because some of the stuff did go sideways, particularly in the water water company acquisition. And it gives us a vehicle to correct misinformation, which there will be some misinformation when we get into the planning stage where we say something should happen.
So I have two comments on that. One is that in order to have your own Facebook page, you have to build membership, right? So it takes a lot to do that. And the second thing is someone has to monitor it every single day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So if someone is willing to work on building membership and monitoring it.
We have a town Facebook page, obviously.
We usually recommend using
which
that.
Which is a good way of getting information out and,
And it's consistent information out that addresses controversial, and Paul just said this isn't as controversial as the water company. I hope not.
You and me both.
That's true.
This town ever faced.
But we need one central place where the committee speaks in case there's a load of misinformation out there about what our plan is as opposed to the town's desire making. Right? You just need that vehicle in there somewhere.
So you don't think the website for the master plan committee, it's not interactive? But that could be a place where you state.
Well, it's a place where we can correct misinformation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But so you don't want to start debating on a Facebook
page.
That's
what I'm saying.
No, that's right.
So I think, I think that it may be something to evaluate if there's ways that we can improve our master plan committee presence on the website. There is a comment form. Mm-hmm. But as a town employee, I think that for any one of us to go onto a website or a Facebook page and start debating a controversial issue, we'd rather have people come to the visioning session and engage in a dialogue with the committee or send a letter in or something.
But I think they won't, I don't know, I'm with Bob.
Bill's my twin brother.
I think the water company advocacy groups were a good model. That in some ways we don't want it at the town site, not only for the reasons Mary just said, but this is going to be a finite process. Mm-hmm. So, but a town Facebook page isn't going to go away.
Right.
So, don't we have a budget? We pay a good social media person who is the administrator to do this? Because I think we have to own that Facebook page. Where the conversation goes sideways is when discussions aren't turned off. And
but it does require having someone every single day. Someone. Build a membership to the page and then monitor every day. I mean, I'm saying this because I did it once in a master plan, and it was so much. It was, and people, you can't believe what people did on that page.
So the online comment piece that's on the committee website, right? Ideally, speaking just as that's the venue I want people to submit comments on.
Right.
It's got their
right.
name, it's got their address, it's a thoughtful written down piece that we can all respond to.
Right.
The tendency to comment on Facebook, it's faster, it's snarkier, it's all of
it
the things.
It can be anonymous.
Right? So
it's like Twitter.
It can be
anonymous, right?
You almost want a gesture. If there's a posting on Facebook, you respond with a link to the comment, to the online
right.
comment.
Yeah, that's a really good
say,
idea.
This is the venue, right? Mm-hmm. This, you know, put it down thoughtfully that we can respond and we can understand what your point is.
Yep.
If you'd rather just do a, you know, forward or two sentence shot at us, then have at it. But that's not contributing to the process. So.
Right, and I think people very quickly, just based on my own town community group, people very quickly get used to who's on what committees, and they'll tag you, and you know, and they'll, and then that gives you the opportunity to, just as you said, direct people to that comment page. I think that is much more manageable than having a Facebook page just based on the amount of monitoring it requires.
So if we use the town Facebook page to convey information on the committee, right? And then if comments come back, we respond with the link to the online comment.
Right.
I think
and you can post the response that you're talking about, you know, combating misinformation. You can post your information on the website, like you said, directing people.
Right. However we use it, we need a form in which if rumors or misinformation are out there, we need to balance that out. We need, because if you recall the road narrowing event of
2018.
The road diet, I'm sorry, using another term. That was totally out of control in terms of social commentary, and it involved another town. But the point is, there was no forum in which we could correct. I'm not talking about arguing.
No.
I'm talking about
saying
information.
Or even here's a link to a page that explains all this to you.
But we need that.
So if we if just to reiterate what Gordon said, use the town Facebook page to invite people to participate, tell them how, when, and where, and then if something comes up there, give them the link to the page where they can make a comment.
And I think
is that satisfactory to you?
It's a forum.
Right.
It's a forum.
Exactly.
And that will engage people as long as you remain reasonably professional about your comments.
And one
if
must.
If you get snarky,
no.
Well, we shouldn't respond to snark.
Right.
Or at least I don't typically.
And we do have to be mindful of public records requirements and open meeting law.
Exactly.
So if we have a forum where one member of this committee is commenting absent the group, you know, the question is that the group consensus? Is this one person's? Who's going to manage all of those records? I mean, I would suggest that in the entire context of the engagement plan, the consultants can think about some of these concerns and maybe make some recommendations for us about how to handle it the best way.
Is there only one town Facebook page?
No. Well, we have
town.
For the town website, we have a Facebook page.
Yeah, right.
But then there's other community
boards,
discussion.
No. I mean the town.
Yes. Yeah, okay. The school,
the school has one, right?
And then, I don't know, I think the police might have one.
Yeah, the police department has one, and it's extremely regulated because it's all public law, freedom of speech.
Yeah. Right.
You can't comment, you can't take people off of it, so you really need to lock that thing down. It doesn't really allow sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
It can be a tricky field, and then there's lawsuits that can come because if you take somebody off and take their speeches off, it's...
That's why I think it's best to just bring them to the the comment box.
And
okay.
And Bob, to your point, the you know, if we see stuff starting to head away from us, right? If there's a rumor that gets legs, you know, then we collectively can figure out how to respond to that, either by Facebook or elsewhere. But we can avoid having to respond to every snarky comment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, you can tell, I think, to your point, when that fire starts to get away from us, right?
Right.
And then we need to act in some way with some clarification and some specificity.
But in unity, because we have, in general, we have to agree.
That's right.
Okay.
That's the hope.
No idea.
Yeah.
But that's where you can respond with a well-placed newspaper article or an article in the Anchor.
Or you could even,
you can see what all the conversation is and then cover it with an article.
It's a very good point.
You can do that. That works.
Have you ever, when you talk about difficult-to-reach populations, have you ever approached community feedback by neighborhoods?
By neighborhoods. Let me think. Yes. But that what we did was we held in each of the elementary schools, you know, because those they were neighborhood based, we held meetings and said it was about the neighborhood. Because I mean the plan is usually town wide but takes into account that there are different geographic areas, right? And we try to keep it at that level, but there are some times when there are some very specific neighborhood needs and desires. What are you thinking?
I just think that I think it's a lot of work, but I think it hasn't been done before, and I think it's a way that we would be sure we aren't leaving out certain neighborhoods. And some have completely developed in the time since our master plan. Hmm. And I speak, you know, we did a survey of the harbor and transportation issues, and we pulled the neighborhood list from a town list, and we left out the shipyard. Which has how many people?
700 units.
700 units and more. And so in those places, you could go to places there and easily host public meetings because they all, most of these developments have common spaces. So I just wonder, it's a way that we don't segregate by you're only going to hear about senior issues at Linden Pond, you're only going to hear about we need, you know, more safety with young families. You're only going to... Whereas if you gather by neighborhoods,
then it's more.
We did that in Dedham. Dedham is a town that thinks in neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And but the whole public engagement process was designed very differently there. We didn't have a lot of big community meetings, which is part of what we were asked to do in this scope. And so in Dedham, we did a kind of a neighborhood-based meeting, and most of the neighborhoods in Dedham, there were a couple that were close enough together that they didn't feel like they were being pushed together. But then we really, out of that, did sort of one big community meeting to, you know, try to find common ground.
But this might be a place for the meeting in the box.
Yeah, meeting in the box may be a solution to this here, which we did not do in Dedham. So
maybe we want to explain what that is.
So just spend a minute on that, because that's
a... Sure. So just very briefly, you know, acknowledging that, you know, our capacity, even your capacity, to go to every... neighborhood and to reach out to every single person is limited. If you're going to rely on us as a team, you know, we're never going to be able to do enough to get to all these individual neighborhoods. So one thing that we've developed in a number of communities is meeting in a box, where we basically package all the same tools that we as a team would take to a neighborhood meeting, a community meeting, and hand that off to someone who acts as a host or facilitator in their, whether it be a neighborhood-based group or an interest-based group, any existing group where people are already gathering. And that packet includes instructions for the host on exactly how you go through a meeting. It gives templates for an agenda, for an invitation, handouts, everything from a sign-up sheet to basic information on what is the master plan, and all the steps you would need to have a meeting. And the other nice thing about it is whatever questions that you all agree to as a group, that those are deployed in Meeting in a Box, they're deployed in any of our online surveys, they're deployed in any of our other in-person meetings. So that's the important thing. You know, the host can be flexible with the packaged agenda that we have, but so long as they're asking those same questions and we're getting apples to apples responses wherever people are. And as long as there's one central person who's then collecting that information, and it's all feeding into
getting it back to us.
Yeah.
And so that would be us
doing
that
without
you.
We give you the box and some instructions.
And if we've got a dozen or 15 people, that's good as far as
you're concerned. You can have this with 10 people, with 2 people. You can bring it to a book club. You can bring it to a church group. Yeah. You can bring it to a neighborhood organization or a condo association.
Your backyard barbecue.
Super, super flexible.
Your
pool party.
Urge us all to give that some thought. I might recommend that I've often had a rule of two in my kind of professional life. So if we could do teams of 2 members of the committee,
yeah, I agree with that. That's a good idea.
Might be more effective.
Exactly.
You might not miss something. Other perspectives and that kind of thing. So and then it's not all on one person either.
That's right. If you each did a team of 2 meeting in a box, just think about. We would get that we will not get in sort of the big community forum, but you'll get people that we won't see.
Even having a table at the farmer's market and, you know, maybe doing a farmer's market 2 weekends in a row and asking for committee members or people that would be willing to go and stand there and talk to your neighbors and ask them all the same questions if they came up. It doesn't have to be very difficult. It's more about engaging and making sure people know that they're heard. Where they are, we'll go to them.
It is the old school retail alternative to about what you said about the demographic, you know, kind of communication techniques that we also need to do.
I have some questions. When do you want to do this outreach? Is it throughout the entire process, or is it in the next 3 months?
So it's throughout the entire process, but there are these surges.
Okay.
There are 3 main surges.
Okay.
The first one is going to be starting soon.
Yeah.
And it's around visioning and goal setting. Uh-huh. The second one is around sharing our findings.
Okay.
And articulating that vision and goal and having people respond to it, start to identify priorities. And the third one is when we unveil the plan.
Okay.
So those are the 3 surges. And they're identified on the website in terms of the timing. So the first one is around the public workshop, right? So there'll be these events happening around it. And the first one is November 20, then February 26th, and then May 27th.
That was the 23rd.
Oh, is it? I have 27. I might be wrong.
We may have, though, the materials and information for committee members at our October.
Oh, absolutely.
Meeting, right?
The goal is to get.
You don't have to wait for those things.
No.
We didn't expect you to get up to speed at the first meeting, so I think.
No, I'm just saying those are the 3 surges, right? And then around those, so prior to.
Once we have the logo,
right?
We can't. And I'm serious.
Yeah.
We actually don't want materials floating around until we can say, this is the comprehensive plan.
I understand that. So, thinking of timing, then if we know your timing, then we can also come back to you with what are the things happening around that time.
That's right.
So one key thing is, and I don't know how this works in the timing, but maybe in the feedback period, the presidential primary election is March 5th or 6th, I forget which. The schools will be closed during the election. So I don't know if
we always do that.
No, we don't. Eileen McCracken requested it, and whatever. This year the schools will be closed. So that could be a time to set up with the election is in the gym and on the edge of the gym. You're gonna and it's. The reason we're closing the schools is because we expect a big turnout.
Sure.
Right. So that was something I noted. The other thing is I think it would be helpful if we have various forums, and even if we have, you know, if we had a forum at the shipyard, but if we posted all the forums that are happening all over town so that people can then
go
to whichever date works for them, not necessarily which neighborhood. And if we have things at various times during mornings, noon times, evenings, then people have flexibility.
Yeah, sure.
Just as a note, we did do a forum on Saturday morning for the superintendent search, and we had one person come.
Really? Oh, wow.
We thought, here, this is, working people can come. But we're like, all right, well, we did it. We gave you the opportunity. So, I don't know, but...
No, that's important. That's one of my questions to you. What has worked before and what hasn't?
Well, except that the forums for the water company purchase on the weekends didn't move forward.
Well, those were in the afternoon, I think. But yeah, they did pull.
They did.
But having the full calendar of opportunity helps.
It also gives us a measure of who's interested, which... we might find ourselves surprised because this, from a marketing point of view, the millennial generation doesn't usually show up.
Mm-hmm. But they,
but they get communicated to.
They get communicated to, and they have some options of when they can go.
Electronic format.
That's right.
So, this is all a measure of who's interested.
So we also had some for other townwide events.
There's somebody behind you that would like to ask a question.
Sorry. I'm just
listening. No, I'm sorry. I had my back to you.
That's okay. So there are also just forums that happen on a regular basis throughout various parts of Hingham that might be effective because the people are already going. So there's PTO meetings in the schools. There's coffee hours at various religious facilities. The preschools have back to school nights and parent visiting nights and that kind of stuff. So just thinking about, rather than adding one more thing to people's calendar, trying to attend meetings that are already
happening.
The public library is also a great place for various meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We'll invite everybody to a Conservation Commission meeting.
There you go.
Really exciting time.
Yeah.
What the big one?
Riveting.
So I also noted that you have neighborhood groups, Bradley Park Association, Bradley Woods Association, Kimball Beach Community Club.
So, I don't want to cut you short.
I'm
sensitive to the time.
Yes.
We're 20 minutes by stretch. If the committee members could think of a couple of those sorts of
groups that we
might not have touched on here, if on your way home. Or some other.
But also, they should look at the draft.
And look at the draft.
Send it back to me.
And send it to Mary. She can do sort of.
Send everything to Mary, and then she can get it to us.
So when you got materials that if we don't get through it all, but you have notes. I'm looking at Liza because she seems to have a lot of notes. Please share that with us for this meeting or other meetings.
And then the other thing is that Mary sent you. An example of a plan that we did for Westwood, so you could see and say, oh, that holds true here too, or no, that doesn't. And then there's a draft that we started for here, for Hingham. And if you could just go through and if you have any thoughts, like what hasn't worked well in the past and why? So we just had one. There was one person came on a Saturday morning. Well, whoops, that's good to know. But you said in the afternoon, at the water discussion, people did come. So that's good to know that did work well.
That's what I'm saying, that's the why. In Westwood,
they all knew that they weren't going to get young parents in the morning because of sports schedules.
Right.
But they said if we did the meeting midday, people will probably come. And so they offered lunch at 11:30. And at 11:25, I thought, no one is going to show up at this meeting. And then all of a sudden, the doors opened, and
it was packed.
The floodgates opened, and the place was packed because the sports were over. So that was the town that was thinking about, when are our athletic schedules actually taking place?
Those are some of the conversations that I have been having as well. What is the biorhythm of the...
It was great.
Exactly, and that's what you have to think about.
Football and soccer game, and it's still didn't come in the morning, so we tried that, but...
That's exactly the feedback that I think we wanted.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and then it is the subject matter very often.
Go to a soccer game. Well, that's why I asked them the timing of when
For sure.
October 12th.
So if you could then go through and if you have any additional thoughts, send them to Mary. And then we want to think about next time. We're going to talk about that first forum and then the other, you know, activities around it. And we want to think about, we'll talk about the format and everything that's going to happen on that day, how to do the outreach for it, who's going to do what, because everyone has, here has to do something, actually more than something, some things, for it, in order for it to work, in order for it to be successful. We'll all have tasks. And then we want to make sure we think about food. We often recommend having a raffle and just letting people know that that is, you know, attending the meeting automatically makes you eligible for a free raffle. And it could be something that the town, that you have to, like, is there somewhere you pay for parking, or
like a beach permit.
Like a beach permit, or a trail
dump stick
book.
Yeah,
it is.
Reserves parking at Christmas in the square.
Well, exactly.
It makes it fun. So town-oriented, but also could be gift certificates to restaurants, coffee shops. And so usually we have a number of them, you know, like maybe between 6 and 10. And so people, and we put it on the flyers, everybody knows. And then it is, it's fun, and it also, they don't, we don't pull the raffle till the end of the meeting, so they have to stay.
You have to be present to win.
And another thing we want to think about is transportation, if the senior van can be made available, if people call in advance. And then the other thing we want to think about is childcare. So is there a way to have students at the high school need community service, or are there some Girl Scouts, or is there a babysitting club, or is there an after-school program? Only you know these things. Where we could have some older children, and then I would supervise them, and then there is a sign, so you don't have to worry that the parents sign, the town isn't liable, so that if we have it, and that does help. It's not, I mean, it depends on the community. In some communities, it actually did help big turnout with parents of young children, in others, less. We try to make it 5 years and older.
But I think it's 7 to 9, it's, I don't know if people want to take their kids out.
Well, we have a Saturday event, too.
We did that for the Mass Memories Roadshow. We found, we did an all-day Saturday event. We did find the seniors did come out in the morning between 9 and 12 for that event. Maybe the seniors weren't engaged in superintendent search, but they did come out for our event. Mm-hmm. We also worked with the rec department, and we arranged for drop-in childcare.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So I can certainly look into that, but if anyone else has other ideas.
Did people take advantage of it?
Some did, really. It gave them the flexibility because a lot of families in town already know the rec staff and they participate.
So they feel comfortable.
So their kids are going someplace where they know, and the rec department is right here on site.
Right,
so it's not like they're far.
Exactly. So that could work, or if you have other, so just think about those things, and then about the food. Food is very important.
So I would just say, within the next week, if you could get information to Mary on all the blank spaces that are in this engagement plan, any thoughts that you have that you think should go into the plan, just if you could do it the next week, because we'd like to be able to bring that, a draft of the completed plan, to the next meeting, along with the various materials.
Yeah,
so if you give yourselves a week, there's your deadline. How's that?
Yeah.
What do you mean by food?
So, it depends on what time of day, right?
I'll handle the food if anyone wants to.
You don't want to have clam chowder at 10 in the morning, though.
Which we did have once.
Really?
Yeah. And people did eat it.
But
I would, anyway.
Did the town plan for Ipswich, huh?
Yeah, right.
Kittery, Maine.
Oh, even worse.
So the committee members, there's three that aren't here. I will be sending them the material.
Yep.
I will also be giving them the 1 week deadline, so don't feel that just because they're not here, they won't be
getting an extension
message.
Good.
Can I ask one more question? I'm sorry. I know I'm not going to be kidding. Is there anything talking about these core assessment meetings? I'm just looking at the time for these. Like, you're not going to get it.
It's not necessarily the public.
Okay.
Right, so that...
Yeah.
The distinction is the core assessments are, they're open meetings, but they are, we're inviting particular experts.
Okay, so that's not the invitation for the public.
That's right. There will be multiple other opportunities for the public to engage at different hours.
And it was a good point. It was for the public.
have 12 minutes, I think.
Thereabouts. But again, I want to make sure we get through so you guys are ready to go and, and get what you need from all of us.
I would like to ask a couple of these questions that we have on the agenda.
Absolutely.
That we probably won't get through all of them, that's fine.
Yes.
But I'm actually going to start with B. If you look at your agenda, there's an ABC question. And this affects several elements of the plan, so the sooner we get some feedback about this, the better. What Massachusetts communities do you think of as Hingham's peer group?
So we do have a group of benchmark communities.
Yep.
And whether or not we think those are the ones that should be used for this purpose, I don't know, but it's certainly a good starting point.
Right. Are those for benchmark, finance benchmark, school benchmark? Sometimes those are different lists, so...
Yeah, I think all of them.
They're finance... Primarily, the schools use it for finance as well. Mm-hmm. The schools have other communities in addition to that that we look at from a performance standpoint. Okay. So, like, Duxbury and Marshfield are not on that list, but we're always paying attention to what Duxbury's doing.
Why? We live there.
So
don't get me started.
So, you know, if you start with the benchmark communities, and if the schools have a few extra...
Yeah.
And we'll do that. I mean, usually that's where we start, is because every town I've worked in has benchmark communities. But often the benchmarks are picked for particular reasons, like we're tracking trends in the schools, or we're looking at financial indicators.
I think in Hingham, it is kind of all of the above, because... Okay. We have an advisory committee, not a finance committee.
Right, right.
Advisory committee deals with...
Everything.
Everything.
Yes.
So we tended to try to make those benchmark communities.
Well, we'll look at those. I think everything. What we'll probably want to find out sooner than later is, if you were from a historic preservation perspective, thinking about what's your peer group, or from an affordable housing perspective, sometimes when you ask from that lens, you get a different set of peer groups. So... be thinking about that. That's some input we're going to want to get from you. I guess the other thing I'd like to find out is, what do you think is the most important thing that you would like to see come out of this planning process?
Yeah.
One most important thing.
Yeah.
Most
a
important
future.
Thing.
A future.
Well, your future is going to be there in one way, shape, or another. I guess we'd like to understand, you know, is there a thing here that would matter to you as something that came out of this process that you would say made it successful or really
I would like to see it address? I would like to see it be as representative as possible of a broad, of what makes up the town.
Mm-hmm.
I think frequently in these exercises, and perhaps because we haven't had good consultants like you in the past, the groups that respond tend to be very self-selected. They tend to be advocates for very specific things, mm-hmm. and because they're advocates, they come to meetings, and all of a sudden, that group tends to be assumed to be representative of the town broadly. And I think, from my perspective, if we can do the kinds of things you're talking about, and really get an involvement from people that aren't frequently involved, that may make up the majority of the town, but that, to me, would make it more successful.
Okay. Right. So it goes back to the goals question, right? It's a recruitment tool. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, right?
Sure.
Right. If you want a benchmark, I want 200 more talent bank applications at the end of this, right? If we're getting to those audiences, those people that have not come to a lot of meetings and have not, you know, necessarily engaged, they may be, you know, in town within the last decade. I'd love to, you know.
Yep.
I don't want to continue to skew the age curve of town meeting down when I go, right? You know, I want to have to activate the cafeteria at every town meeting, right? You know, just some way to get more people aware and engaged.
And once we accomplish Jerry and Gordon's goal of being really satisfied that we really did manage to hear from everyone, I think we'll be successful if we have concrete steps that we can take.
And I think the clarity of understanding has to come from the fact that this planning isn't for tomorrow. It is for 20, 30 years from now, under, I think, what will be very different circumstances. And if the young folks who want to stay in this town will become engaged, they will become the town leaders. I don't do any land planning anymore, used to, but we do massive corporate planning on a global scale. And one of the things people don't understand, when we build a million square foot factory to manufacture widgets, that isn't for tomorrow. That's for 30 years from now, while they're still paying off, so to speak, the asset they created.
That's right.
And that is what we're doing here. This town has to be... I'm very concerned personally about the impact of rising sea levels, because we are dealing with that in India. In Bombay, it goes underwater all the time now, and everything has to stop. So what we're really doing here, why it's important to engage this younger generation that I worry about communicating with, is because if they want to be part of this town and they want a future in this town, the investment that it's going to take to accomplish some of the things we're going to be talking about is not buying a water company.
Right.
It's $50 million, $200 million to deal with some of the things we're going to have to deal with in the next 30 years.
So other than the schools, where do these young people go? For example, in Derry, New Hampshire, we're working now, we went to the breweries and the coffee shops. What? Where?
I was raised as a Quaker. I don't do breweries. Which one was it?
There are several.
Oh, really?
Yes.
There's
sports
hope.
Yes.
No, I think
so. Where, other than the schools, where?
Sports.
And the farmers market.
And the farmers market.
How about some of the social?
Well, I have another goal. I'd like to see that 3 years after that, the boards and committees are actively using, following the plan.
Yeah, and there are ways to make that happen. Mm-hmm.
I used the master plan from 2000 for over a decade to guide me in permitting decisions that I made. Mm-hmm. When it became stale, I was no longer part of that decisional process. But that, to me, is the value of what we're doing here tonight. Mm-hmm.
All right. But can I add to, I know Paul did it on the planning board, but when I said all boards, I meant all boards, not just the plan.
The permanent board,
right.
Anybody else have anything you would like to contribute to that question? Some of you have been quiet. Anybody?
I just want to piggyback again on Bill, like not only anticipate climate and where we're going to be in 20 and 30 years, but demographically. How will the town respond to changing faces? Because that's the reality of the world. And will we be, and changing, I think it's the, and will we be nimble? Like, what if there is a major health crisis?
Well said, right.
How are we going to be ready for it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a living document.
Mm-hmm. It should be. It has to be designed to be that way.
Well, it has to breathe in and out. it's like a commuter.
So how long do you think it's good for?
I generally think master plans, about after 10 years, need to be updated. I do a lot of work in fiscal and economic impact studies, and I'm old enough to remember when we didn't have Prop 2.5. And the assumptions that we made in fiscal impact studies in 1979 were totally different than the assumptions that we make today. If some of you went back and looked at the tax rates in our towns in 1970, you would be shocked to see numbers like $45 a thousand. You'd say, what was going on? It's because our towns were not at 100% full and fair cash market value in 1970. That happened because of a Supreme Court case in 1977. So things change, you know, and I just think to try to there's almost an arrogance, I think, to thinking that somehow you can see so clearly out 20 years that you can just park a plan for 20 years. I think what you need to do is assume you're doing an implementation horizon for 10, and you're building into that implementation program how you're going to work toward the update.
Right,
the That's my opinion.
Right.
And it's my experience as a planner.
From the last experience I went through, though, I think the community is focused on really the bigger threat to it, and as a result, the master plan didn't truly reflect the reality that we had to confront for the last 20 years in Birmingham. So,
can you explain that a little more?
What was the big fear?
Well,
housing in 40B.
You know, we were dealing with the train down to the square. We totally missed Erickson, 40B, and you know we got behind the 10% eight ball right out of the gate. Been struggling ever since. It's a perpetual problem. We've just recently reached that figure, but you know that could change tomorrow if the legislature says, "Oh, you need to be 15% or 20." I mean, this—I don't want to miss the big issue going forward. So it's all well and good to kind of see the trees right in front of us, but I want to make sure we catch the forest, which is why we got you guys.
A little pressure.
We did the vulnerability test for rising sea level, so we should look at that data that we already have, because that's going to be here.
Absolutely.
That's going to affect a lot of our infrastructure.
A 13-foot high seawall, I think, is the number.
Does your experience suggest that you have to go in every 10 years and redo this with a town, or can you? Are there tools where you can just make the adjustments as you go along? Or
I think if a plan is being maintained and if it's being evaluated every year, and if the town has a process for amending a plan, I think you get a longer life out of it. But the problem is that after about 5 years, people lose their focus, or they tried to implement something in the plan and it failed, and then people throw their hands up and say, it didn't work. I think that's really where you kind of hit the wall. But at some point, you have to really step back and take stock. And I'm just saying, I think 10 years seems to be sort of the rhythm for these things. But it helps to when you're at that 10-year point, if you've actually been evaluating and updating that plan as you go along.
And it also depends on big events like, you know, a recession or like a big health crisis or, you know, some things just happen that you couldn't have foreseen and that throws things off.
Can you guys make available to us through our website perhaps some of your recent master plans?
Sure.
That you've done for similar types of communities? Because I, for one, would love to see examples. You know, what is that finished product? How does it relate to other things that guide us as we're going through?
You're going to see such different things, you know?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
The towns,
it depends.
It just, they're all different, you know? I mean, I can tell you, that's probably the thing I've learned the most in this business in all these years, is every one of these towns is different, and I'm not being trite. You would think that there was some commonality. We're all operating under the same general laws, and we all have sort of the same kind of principles in our charters. These towns are all so very different, and some people just have a passion for a topic, and the plan is going to focus on that, and you won't see it show up in another one. So it might be good for you to see a kind of sampling of some different plans. It's fascinating.
Every town is concerned about dog refuse.
Oh, my God. Dogs. It's just...
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
We're all pros at that.
Yeah. I'm out of those battles.
It's wild.
So, coyotes.
So we're about at our time,
yep.
And I want to kind of be loyal to that, except that my boss has something to do. So.
I just have one request of everyone. I will put up more information on the resources page from the consultants, but I would ask all of you, if you have data from the town hall study analysis or other reports that your group has worked on that we can put on that page for the consultants to benefit from, that master plan committee resources page, it's for them and for you and the community. So please, some of you have already forwarded me information and data. Please send things along and help me make sure that they have what they need too. Okay.
And can I add one more thing to that? If you could each make a list of your networks, like do you belong to a book club? Do you go to a house of worship? Do you go to a PTO, PTA? Do you have a neighborhood association? Are you on a Facebook group? You know, whatever it is.
Do you go to a brewery?
Right, do you go to a brewery on a regular basis? So your gym, you go to a gym, you go to yoga. Write those down.
So thank you. I'm really excited to be going through all of this with all of you. So this has been a great first meeting. Thank you to the team.
Thank you.
We have some of our assignments that will be more
Again, communications, particularly for the communications to the consultant team through Mary. I think you all have my cell phone. You can call me anytime, particularly if you feel like you've got some concerns about the process or where we're headed. I would love to hear those directly and quickly. We can be responsive, but this is a great group to be doing this, so thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yeah.